Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's up, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs and leaders looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. In today's interview episode of Getting Work to Work, I talk with serial entrepreneur Joan Yabani about her projects here in the United States and Ghana, Africa. She shares her entire journey and how it has affected her choices, the importance of improving her skills and being indispensable, her crockpot mentality when it comes to working on projects, and what it is like to work in an emerging market. As you've heard in the opening to this show for some time now, big ideas are important to me, and what Joan shares in this interview is a clear example of what it looks like to not only chase big ideas, but to actually bring them to life. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/278. Joan, welcome to Getting Work to Work. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are and the work you do?
I am originally from Ghana, West Africa. Grew up a little bit in the Czech Republic and then spent the rest of my time here in the U.S. So hop, skipped, and jumped a couple of places. I currently work for a software company or agency, and I also do work in Ghana as well, developing a mobile app that's for navigation and wayfinding, doing a lot of work also with the arts and artistic people, trying to create opportunities for them as far as business goes. So yeah, that's kind of the quick short, Joan.
Yeah. Well, the quick short is amazing. And the long and short of it that I read was, you know, you described yourself as a dreamer and innovator. Mm-hmm. And what I like about that is you not only use that as a title, but you seem to model what it means to both be an artist mm-hmm. and an entrepreneur with the work that you do.
Yeah.
And so how have you found, balance between those two worlds? Because sometimes they can be exact opposites.
Exactly. I think my life has forced me to find that balance. A little piece about me that you probably won't find in most places is I'm actually a formerly undocumented immigrant. And so just out of necessity, I've had to be innovative in how I've lived my life and approached entrepreneurship or my ideas. And because I don't have a lot of access to, you know, small things like even when I was going to school, like federal aid, I'm not allowed to get any, even after I changed my status. And so having to be artistic and innovative in how I decide to solve my solutions or solve my problems, or not even seeing problems as problems and just trying to be like, okay, well, this happened, but it's actually a solution. We're going to figure it out. And so I think that is actually a blessing because I've been able to be creative and also solve a lot of problems that I've seen for myself. And there's almost a luxury in not being given a pathway of quote unquote success, because then you get to do it for yourself. Then you get to be creative in that way. So I think that's my balance. It's just because that's been my life. So it seems normal to me.
So you said formally undocumented immigrant? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So whenever I was here, when I first became undocumented, it was because I was under my dad's status. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea what that meant because the immigration system here is so backwards and all over the place. And so when he left the U.S. to move back to Ghana, I mean, I was freshman year of high school, running track, scholarship, you know, was like scholarships were being thrown my way. So it made sense for me to be in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And didn't know that left me kind of in a bad situation. So after I graduated from high school and I was about to receive a scholarship, I realized that this can't happen because of my status. And so I had to go through a long process, but eventually was able to change my status and be a legal immigrant in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah.
What impact does that have? I mean, on your ability to problem solve, because you said you have to be a problem solver, but you probably have a deeper connection to, I guess, real problems as opposed to, you know, problems that we think are problems, but they aren't.
I think The impact, I don't know. I don't know if it's just because of how my parents also communicated as we were going, like my sister was also here with me. She was 21. So as we were going through it together, the way our parents communicated it to us was, listen, this is unfortunately what you're in right now, but you are not going to be defined by it. And because of this, that encouragement in a way, the impact was positive. I mean, whenever I wasn't able to get money to go to school, I was like, okay, I'm going to work and I'm going to, you know, take notes, sell my notes. I tutored people on the side. I did a bunch of different things. And then when it came to places like, okay, I can't get hired in this place, fine, I'll do it myself. I'll offer my services in different ways. And even as I started getting job opportunities, it was kind of this thing of like, okay, do the best you can, learn everything you can, like roles that are horizontal and vertical, be indispensable. Like the impact is, it just forces you to consistently always be in a space of how can I create something better? How can I make something more efficient? How can I make it work for me if a system is not built for me? Like, what can I do to make sure that I'm not sitting here feeling like my hands are tied?
Wow. That skill to be able to look at life that way, that's fantastic. And I imagine that at your job at a software company, that's immensely valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's been really helpful. And especially since this has been my first introduction to software or technology period. Before, I was working for a diamond dealer. Oh, wow. and I was doing, you know, like vendor inquiries and all these different things. And so coming into software and this whole new space, I really loved it because it does allow you to be entrepreneurial in your role. And because we cater to different clients across the board, you get to see how different problems people can create solutions around them. And you just see people consistently changing like the landscape. And so it makes you feel like you're part of something bigger. So I love it.
Yeah. I'm curious where you came up with the phrase love child of strategy and creativity.
I was trying to figure out a way to not sound super bland in all my social media bios. And I didn't want to say blend, but I just figured I'd be, if strategy and creativity had a child, it would be me. So that's what I put down, and it seemed to have, it stuck. I really like it now. That's kind of my little brand.
And one of the things that was fascinating was you have something called a life-size coloring book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm envisioning a bunch of people in pajamas standing around a giant coloring book, you know, with crayons.
Well, you know, it's crazy, not in pajamas, in regular clothes, but still standing around a large coloring book. So that was birthed out of my best friend and I were roommates, and she was an artist, and she would paint. Well, she at the time she was working as a nurse, but she would paint and then just put the paintings in her closet. And I was so confused by it. And so finally, I just asked her, like, what's going on? And she didn't feel like she was good enough or she wasn't confident enough in her work to display it. So I stole her paintings, kind of, and got her to reach out to one or two of her friends. And I told her, I was like, I booked this place on this date. We're having an art show. And, you know, just be ready to just stand by your paintings. You don't have to talk. Mm-hmm. And so we did that first show. 150 people showed up. There was food, drinks, and it was really great. And we did a few more. And then I realized that even though work was getting purchased and commissioned, the artists weren't always guaranteed money at the end of that. And so the exposure was nice, but how do you solve the problem of feeding starving artists? Right. And so even though I consider myself artistic and an artist, I also know how it feels to be on the outside where you wish you could be part of the creative process, but you feel like maybe you cannot because you're not this beautiful person that's drawing these crazy murals or images. And so I collaborated with a few artists and we created these life-size coloring book pages that were like 20 feet wide, 10 feet tall, and got coloring pencils and crayons, set up a bar, some food, a DJ, and invited people to come in and be part of the process. And so you always see the finished product, but this time you get to be a part of it. And it took off. And at the end of it, you know, the money from the door and the drinks and food went to the artist. And I was really happy that we had figured out a model to still show off their work, but then allow their fans or their community to be a part of completing it.
Wow. That's awesome.
Thank you. So no pajamas, but still the same vibe.
I mean, you can just do pajamas on the next one just to shake it up, right?
Yeah, this is actually a really good idea. We'll have brunch instead of all the other food.
So when you hear someone who, you know, they're hiding their art in the closet, mm-hmm. and it's beautiful art, and mm-hmm. they're hungry, mm-hmm. metaphorically or physically hungry.
Yeah.
You know, how do you confront the starving artist mentality knowing the journey that you've come through?
Mm. I've realized that at the baseline of all of it is people just really want an opportunity. And sometimes that opportunity means somebody believing in them enough to not put them in a space where they're not comfortable. So it's not like I made her a one woman show and made her speak in front of all these people, because that's not where she was comfortable. But she did want the opportunity to show off her work, even though she didn't know how to do that. And so confronting that, sometimes just saying, hey, I believe in you, and I'm going to do the little bit I can of getting you a space, not letting you be alone in it, and standing next to you. And from there, you can take it wherever you want to. But just know that I'm willing to create a space for you to get ahead. And I think so many of us just need someone to tell us that, or to create that for us and be like, you're welcome in this space if you feel comfortable enough. And that's coming from where I was, where a lot of doors were closed off to me because of my situation. Mm-hmm. I was really blessed to come in contact with a few people that were willing to say, hey, you're worth taking an opportunity or a risk on. And so let's do it. Let's see how you do. And whenever given that, you just do whatever you can to make sure you make them proud or exceed expectations.
Yeah. So how did she feel on the other end of this experience?
She loved it. And she ended up now being in like several different shows. She's done work for Duke. She's painted murals for different businesses that have opened. She gets commissioned for work often now. She's a full-time, she's no longer a nurse. She's a full-time photographer, graphic designer, painter now. And, you know, we've talked about it. And as friends, just talked about how appreciative she was to know that somebody was willing to tell her. Because, you know, she's also African, and you may not know this. In our culture, you can only be a doctor, lawyer, engineer. And so for her to have stepped out, and for someone who also is in her culture to be like, you can be an artist and go ahead and do that, and we'll support you. It was something that she needed. And so now she's living out her artistic dreams, applying to residencies. And now she's willing to talk to people, which is huge, because some artists are kind of antisocial. But yeah, I think it went really well.
That's amazing. You know, one of the things that I love asking people is about the big ideas they are chasing. And what I appreciate about you is that you are chasing big ideas. And when I was talking to Nathan from Story Driven, and he's like, who do you want to talk to? And I'm like, people that are chasing big ideas. And he's like, I've got someone for you. And it's you. And how do you devote time and energy to bring all of these things to life with excellence, intention, and purpose?
Not that I don't sleep, but I can't just leave it undone. And so I think the best thing also about where I work is our company is really supportive of our entrepreneurial things outside of work. And so we have Fridays that are dedicated to labs, which means you can work on a personal project. And so sometimes I use that time to go towards some of my projects, but also I collaborate a lot. I think I've heard this quote, like collaboration over competition. And I really believe in that. And so if I don't have the bandwidth to complete something to perfection, I make sure that I bring people in who I know who have the same standards that I do and are similarly mission driven. So we can do it together, because you can't do everything by yourself. And that's the number one fact. And so I've worked really hard to build a network of people around me who are willing to contribute and collaborate and just want to see these things come to life too. People who are not scared to hear me say, okay, don't say no yet, but think about this. And be like, okay, let's do it. Let's see what happens. I love the risk takers. And so I can say collaboration has been the number one thing. And then two, I have surrounded myself also around people who demand perfection from me, just like I demand perfection from myself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can get down on yourself and, you know, like, okay, I'm not doing this right. And I know that since they know that they want the best for me, when they say, Joan, this is good, like, trust yourself, this is good. Because sometimes you can overthink it and you can overextend yourself trying to make it something that you don't need to do all that. Like what you've done is good. Like rock with it and move forward. And then the third thing is I live in a crock pot mentality. Like
that's awesome.
Because you know, you've had a really good piece of meat from a crock pot. It's just like so nice and tender. But if you do it in the microwave, it's cooked, but it's not good. And so some things take time and being okay with that. I think we're so used to instant gratification that if something doesn't happen in 2 weeks or a day, or we don't get 5,000 followers because we dropped this new project that we think is so amazing, it's not good. It's like, no, I'm willing to work on something for a year or for 2 years and to know that this dream of mine may take 5 and that's okay.
Whew. Yes. Yes. So one of the things in your crock pot that is absolutely fascinating is your project in Ghana called Treme or Treme.
Treme, yeah.
Treme. I already forgot. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
But what's this project all about?
So we built a mobile application that basically allows sellers who are – okay, so let me start by saying 80% of the workforce in Africa – is informal, which means most people have those small little chop bars on the side of the street, or they are, let's say, in the marketplace that's kind of like a bazaar. And that bazaar has people selling foods, groceries, cloth, everything. But you have to walk around maybe for hours before you find the person that you're looking for. So we decided that we wanted to give these sellers the opportunity to geolocate themselves. And then you as the buyer can just pull up this app, search for whatever you're looking for. It lets you know everybody in your vicinity that's selling it, how close they are. And you're able to navigate within the app directly to that person.
That's awesome.
And instead of, you know, you'll see these grocery stores popping up now in different parts of Africa and in Ghana. And you'll see people trying to, I guess, make it more modern. But these marketplaces and these workers are a huge part of our culture. And most of these marketplace people are women. And so that's why Ghana is one of the top entrepreneurial countries for women, because they're starting these small businesses. And so instead of doing something that completely subverts that, we wanted to support our culture, but also make it more efficient.
Yeah.
So yeah, find these women, be in the marketplace, because that's who we are. Cause they're your auntie down the street. And, you know, cause if I do something in that marketplace before I get home, my dad already knows it happened. It's just like, it's a real village mentality where everybody knows everybody. Everybody usually want to see everybody get successful. And I think it's important that we pump our resources into propping up our culture as we move it to be more like technology, you know, like backed and efficient. It can still be home.
What's it like to break into an emerging market like that?
It's ridiculously difficult because there is, luckily for us, my founding team, we're all from Ghana. And so we know the culture, we know the people, but one, the way things are done here in the US are completely different. Time is not a thing. Things get done when they get done. And so you have to get used to, one, a new way of speaking to people, a new way of, you know, even government, like registering the company was a process because you had to talk to one person, then send a photo to another person and do all these different things. Even whenever you want to enter into a certain village or a certain city, you have to go see the chief because the chiefs own the land, not the government. And so, you know, that comes with bringing the chief a bottle of alcohol and telling them the story about this bottle of alcohol and how important it is and how spectacular it is and how you just wanted to give them this gift and not even mention your project or what you want to do. And then they come back maybe a few days later and are like, you're welcome to do whatever you want. And so, understanding those cultural weird like norms and also understanding that just because you can register a company in 2 days in the US and get things onto the Apple and Google Play Store and people download it and you can email people and people are used to that. That's not how it's going to be. You know, we have to have people on the ground who are talking to these marketplace vendors, who are telling them about the technology and why it's important and how it can help them, and who are telling them, hey, these are going to be the people that you can reach if they come in, you know, convincing them that it's worth it because they've lived their whole lives doing it just one way and they're still doing it. And so it's a lot more handholding that's involved. It's a lot more relationship building, which I love. I love the fact that we're so relationship like focused. It's not one of those things where it's like, okay, you have money. Okay, you can make it efficient. Sure, we'll do it. No, it's like, do I know you? Do you care about me? Do you care about where I'm coming from or why I'm even doing this? Do you? And then, okay, you do. Now I'm willing to take the step and even listen to what you have to say. So it's terribly difficult, but I think it's so worth it. I mean, Africa is the youngest population on the planet. Mm-hmm. The average age is 19. And so there's so much potential. I mean, we have all the resources. We have China imports their water from Africa. So it's just one of those things where I think even though it's a difficult thing to break into emerging markets, it's really worth it if companies take that risk or that leap. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I imagine prevent people from going into an emerging market is just, I think, the perception of corruption or mm-hmm. the very real nature of corruption in some mm-hmm. places. But then also that cultural status quo mm-hmm. of this is how it's always been. We've been doing this way forever. Yeah. Why do we need to do it differently?
Exactly.
And how you know, you mentioned relationships. Is that really the way through all that?
That is definitely the way through all of that. It's all about who you know. And I think we've heard that a lot more now in terms of recruiting and people are getting jobs. Like, oh, it's about who you know, not everything, what you know. Yeah. And that's the truth. Corruption is a very real thing, but it's real, just as real in Ghana or all of Africa as it is in Europe and the US. The only difference is that Western countries have systems and processes that are built better to hide the corruption. Ours is just right in your face, which I almost prefer, because then you know how to navigate. You don't know that if I do this, there's actually somebody behind hidden doors who will close it for me. You know exactly who you have to get through and exactly who you have to avoid. And so even with our app, because it's something that, you know, we want to make sure that it still serves people, we've purposefully ignored the government and how we've maneuvered, because it can get kind of weird. But if you have the people support, then the government doesn't have as much stake in hurting your business model or anything like that. So one is understanding that, like, you have to build relationships with people who are already doing stuff on the ground. And then the cultural norms, sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to talk about this, because some things you can say, this is kind of pointless. We don't need to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But it is our culture. And a lot of times we've decided to forego our culture to be accepted by what we consider mainstream, which is usually Western standards. Right. And we're African. Like, we have our languages, we have our cultures, we've been doing things before recorded history. So it's okay. Yeah, it's okay if we keep doing things those way, because it's also respect. You know, there's a reason why we do what we do with the chiefs, is because they're our elders and they hold most of our, you know, our family histories in their brains and in their families. And so to show them that respect of bringing them that bottle of alcohol is nothing. Yeah. However, whenever you go to a government official and they're like, oh, we won't do this unless you guys give us 10% equity, then you know, okay, I can walk away from this because I do have the support of the people and I do have support of the chiefs. And the truth is, if you have the chiefs, you have the whole country, because even government officials have to report back to the chiefs. And yeah, so that was really another thing that I appreciated about, one, our knowledge about our home, is that we knew that at the end of the day, we need to go back to the people who actually have the power. And that's, luckily in Ghana, it's not the same everywhere, is the people and the chiefs of these like tribes that we are a part of. And if you have their support and you have, you know, their backing, you can really usually get past some of that government corruption that comes into play.
So you mentioned a little bit about Western values and mm-hmm. the perception of change. Is there a line between impacting positive change and being seen as wanting to impart Western values?
Yeah, I think there is, but I think that's a personal line. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say unfortunately, because we are losing the bits of our culture in this. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because the West has been considered the standard, a majority of Africans and Ghanaians, especially since Ghana is so closely tied to the West now, mm-hmm. are changing to try to be more like the West, and how mm-hmm. we speak and how we dress and even how we communicate with our elders and our government now, how we approach certain like business deals or even our trade, all these different things. And so the line at this point is kind of blurred because people do want to change, because we have been conditioned to think that what we consider normal is actually archaic, when in reality it's not. We just have to, you can update something without completely erasing it, but we're erasing it, which is something that we're trying to combat and showing, especially with this project, that you can make something better and still support your culture and still encourage people to participate in your culture while preserving it.
What kind of response do you get from the vendors in these marketplaces when you're telling them a story and presenting them with this wayfinding application?
They're excited because, you know, the truth is too, some of these vendors move around. Some of them aren't lucky enough to have a stationary place in the market. So there's like a safety risk. There is that, like, nobody always knows where I am. So they're excited because they're like, I'm already on my phone. And so if all I have to do is locate myself and people can come find me, that's going to increase my profit. Like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And they've seen that growth. And just, I think that one piece of it where they actually see the growth is really exciting because there's a lot of people who live in Accra. It's about 1 million people. And so at the end of the day, it's like you're already seeing a ton of people every day, but to notice an increase and to notice that you're more connected and that your business is getting better, that's really exciting for us because we said something in the hopes that it would happen. And so for it to actually be happening is something really exciting. They're seeing a difference.
It's interesting because I have a couple of friends, one from Gambia and one from Ghana, actually, who both moved to the US when they were younger, but eventually both created nonprofits in Gambia and Ghana to impact where they had come from. And I'm curious what keeps you focused on Ghana, even though you're thousands of miles away.
We left Ghana when I was really young, but, you know, growing up around my family, of course, and then other Ghanaians, you're always tapped into your culture. But what really got it for me was my mom had always had this tattoo on her arm with her name and her address. And I was wondering because my parents are very against tattoos. So I was kind of like, what is that? And it was actually when my mom was young in like the 50s, 60s, they were still taking slaves from Ghana. And so they started tattooing people's names and addresses on their arms that if their bodies were found, they can at least return them to their families. And I started to understand what that big push from our parents' generation was to like take their kids out. Whereas like they want to bring them to the Europe or the US to get education and to have better lives. Mm-hmm. And for me, as much as I owe everything to my parents' sacrifice of that, I don't ever want my children to have to make that decision. Because I know what it feels like to be a Ghanaian who's grown up in Europe and the US and not always being like invested in your culture and how sometimes isolating that can feel. I want the generation after me to feel like they can go back home and that it's some place that they can be and succeed. I don't want them to feel like my parents did about us, where the only way that we could succeed was to get us out. I think I almost want to play the role of that generation that like shifts the tide of creating home again at home. Yeah. Because our parents did a great job of taking us out and exposing us to more. Now it's our turn to expose the world to our potential.
That's amazing. I love that a lot.
Thank you.
A question that I often ask people who work with nonprofits overseas, so that they are prepared to have an answer, is this: why should we care? Because it can be hard enough to care about your own place, let alone care about people 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
But we need to care. And I'm curious what your answer is, why we should care.
I think we need to care here because when opportunities are created for people thousands of miles away or 2 miles away, it actually works in a cycle where we're creating an ecosystem of opportunity, an ecosystem of awareness, an ecosystem of whatever your organization is focused around. And so I don't always believe that people need to like care specifically about Africa or Ghana, but they need to care about the fact that people are doing work trying to fix certain issues and they need to participate, whether it's locally or globally. And that's all that matters, is like to understand that the ecosystem is the biggest part of this whole thing. You should care about the whole thing. And how can you plug in wherever you are or wherever you want to be? Because a lot of people feel like caring means that they have to go to Africa, or they have to go to wherever the thing is, or they have to send money or do all these things. It's like, right. No, I think that's not the case. I mean, there are people doing things here in Durham that do directly affect work that's being done in Ghana, and things are connected. So if you see a value in something, plug in and talk to people and hear their stories, because you caring about that one piece innately ties into something else. You shouldn't care if you don't care. Nobody can force you, but yeah. At the end of the day, the things that you do care about, you should try to tap in, because little do you know, I've benefited from people caring about something as small as getting diversity in technology, mm-hmm. and not knowing that now that ties into me trying to bring technology to Ghana. And I think that's important. So yeah. Whatever you can plug in the whole general ecosystem is important. That's why you should care.
And it's interesting that you mentioned ecosystem, because it leads into this next question of what is your long range vision and how does that fuel what you do locally and globally?
I want to build the RTP of arts and innovation in Ghana. So I want to have like a Juilliard-esque type school where it's not based off of if you have a high school degree or a college degree or something, but if you're talented or you have an interest and giving people the opportunity to be apprentices in their interest and really training, like real hands-on training, and then also having a lab where people can build things, whether they're playing with, you know, AI or they're doing woodworking or they're painting, but like how do you take these gifts and your talents that you do have and how can we almost accelerate them into turning it into profit for you? Mm-hmm. And then I want to be a piece where you can almost have like a VC aspect of things, where we're investing in these young people or older people that are coming out of our accelerators or our school, and making sure that they have the financial backing to be able to make their things come to life. I want to do this when it comes to art. I want to do it when it comes to housing and solutions that make sense for our country and be a hub for that. I just want to be a place where I bring in the smartest people in the world mm-hmm. who care about Ghana or who care about Africa and its improvement. And how mm-hmm. can we really do this thing together? Because we do have a really unique opportunity to shift how Africa is perceived in a generation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my long range vision.
Well, I love the fact that I've heard it described before of, you know, brain drain when the smartest people leave a country. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're really wanting to make sure that people are coming back to the country so that, you know, they're thriving there yeah. with their brains, bringing exactly. the smartest people in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah. We can be a hub for it all. We're large enough. we can do it all. Yeah. I think a lot of people feel, well, when they hear Africa, they hear everything that's been told to them. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing people go to Africa and experience it and are just being mind blown. Just kind of yeah. like, what, this is here? It's like, yeah, this is here. And it, you know, you can build a Fortune 500 company in 5 years in Africa. You know, we have crazy population. Our demographics are crazy. Our buying power is crazy. Our resource power is crazy. It's just kind of just that willingness to step in. And so, yeah, I'm so excited to be a part of it.
I can't remember which interview I've done recently, but there was someone saying that the future of development, software development and you know, web development is in Africa, mm-hmm. and that the next, you know, million developers are going to be there.
Yeah.
And I love that picture as well, because it speaks to the fact that in order for software to grow, it has to grow in these places as yeah. opposed to growing unsustainably in America.
Most definitely. Yeah. And I think also the reason for that is you're growing and tapping into talent that can answer questions that haven't been able to be answered before because they've lived different situations. You know, mm-hmm. there's been several times when, you know, ideas have come from conversations that I've had with other people. And they're like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. It's like, well, I've lived a really different life. I think that's important. We talk a lot about in tech specifically about diversity and inclusion. And then now is the whole diversity of thought thing. And yeah, that's important. Being able to now allow technology to stop happening to people and actually with people and the people that it really is going to impact the most is really important. And it's necessary.
So a question popped into mind as you were describing, you know, diversity and tech here. Mm-hmm. What does diversity in Ghana look like?
What is that? Well, now we actually have a very large population of Asians, Indians, and Russians. But it's interesting. I've had to explain several times to my family who's in Ghana what diversity means. Or even as we talk about certain things going on in the political climate here, like microaggressions or small things like, not small, but things like you're being discriminated against. And they're just kind of like, what? You get discriminated against for being, because that's the norm. And so we're diverse in the sense of, we think that just because I'm an Ashanti tribe person, I hang out with a person from the Ewe tribe, it's different. But now that we're welcoming a lot more different types of people into our country and they're investing, it's starting to look a little different. There's a lot of different countries doing their thing there. There's even Brazilians in Ghana now. Americans are moving there and not coming back. So it's starting to get a lot more diverse. It's not just a country full of different tribes in Ghana. It's starting to pick up a little bit.
Do you think they'll be able to solve, I guess, I don't know if problem is the right word, but do you think they'll handle diversity a little better than we do here?
That's to be determined. And this is the one space where our government does hold a large amount of stake in that, is in how they divvy up ownership of certain things. And unfortunately, some things have gone, the way things have gone the past few years, like for instance, some of the loans that Ghana has taken from China, or how we handle our trade and our economy is suffering because of it. And it's being bought out by outside investors or non-Ghanaians, non-Africans, period. And so it may still look like Ghana, but in terms of who owns it, it's not very diverse. It's being handled very similarly to how it's handled here. And that's getting scary. Mm-hmm. The good thing is there are a lot of Ghanaians who are now becoming very aware of it and are starting to hold the government accountable and are starting to speak out about it. And also who are starting to pump their money back into Ghana and be like, oh, okay, no, I need to stop this. I need to buy the land. I need to buy these properties. I need to do this. I need to invest in these businesses, because if we don't, someone else will, because they see the value of our country and the continent. So yeah, that's really to be determined. It's at that critical line where it could go either way.
So as money is being funneled back into the local community, what does the next phase of Treme look like?
So the next phase is we're planning our scale into Nigeria and Kenya. And then also we're building an agriculture platform where we're working to create an IoT like sensor that goes into the ground and can communicate directly to the small farmers and let them know. Basically, it works like with their watering source, where it can turn off and on to keep the soil just the perfect amount of like wet for the crop, but then also so it helps like with water waste, and then also helps tell you exactly whenever it's time to harvest your crop so that it can help with crop waste that we deal with a lot. And then giving those farmers all that data, they're able to make better decisions about what they decide to farm that year or during that season. Then that data also helping the government make better decisions about how we handle our produce and our agricultural trade, because right now we don't do a lot of exporting of our agricultural resources. So trying to build that platform for small and large farmers. And then we're also working on a wholesale buying platform for the vendors and sellers who do have larger quantities of inventory, able to tap into buyers within West Africa and beyond to sell their products. So yeah, that's what it's looking like right now.
That is amazing. That's just like a ginormous, like, big idea. I mean, how awesome is that? I mean, what a great use of technology to just revitalize things that need to be revitalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we can do it. And we've told people, they're like, oh yeah, that's possible. I'm like, yeah, it is possible. I don't know why we're still sitting around here. I'm so excited. I think now the biggest thing is we've all looked around at each other at one point. It's kind of like, so we have to move back home soon. It's like when that's going to happen, the official move back to the continent.
Well, Joan, this has been a fabulous conversation. I've enjoyed learning all about your work. And the last question that I have for you is, what was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
Oh, the last book or podcast that blew my mind. Well, I recently just read this book. It was called Homegoing. And it's like a series of short stories, I guess you could say. But it's a novel by a young woman. She's actually Ghanaian. And just kind of like tells a different stories of different characters and dives deep in there. And it really just hit home because, I mean, I'm prepping to go home, really. And it talks about kind of changing where you're from and your circumstances, how your past speaks to your present and your future. And yeah, I would recommend that book to every single person.
Well, Joan, thank you so much for your time today on Getting Work to Work. It's been awesome to learn what it means for you to be a dreamer, innovator, and love child of strategy and creativity. And just thank you for making my life much more richer today just because of this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate this opportunity. This has been awesome.
Before we wrap up this episode of Getting Work to Work, I want to leave you with two questions. What big idea are you chasing? And what odds and background do you have to overcome to bring it to life? I hope what Joan is doing in North Carolina and Ghana inspires you to do the same wherever you are. As she said near the end of the interview, it is possible. You know, there are a lot of podcasts you could be listening to, and I'm grateful that you would spend valuable time listening to Getting Work to Work. Thank you. Would you be willing to spread the word about the show with your friends, other creative entrepreneurs and leaders who want to get their work to work? You can send them to gwtw.co to access every episode and find the links to stream the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and more. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice, encouragement, or just want someone to say hi to? Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at CM Studios. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.